Good morning. It is 4 minutes after 9 o'clock. If you're joining us online, we are in the Senate Finance Committee. With me this morning in Senate Finance, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, myself, Senator Fairclough. On today's agenda, we have HB 180, the Military Youth Academy, followed by HCR 6, establishing legislative task force on unmanned aircraft. If I could invite Representative Wilson to the table, Mr. McHugh. House Bill 180 is before us. Again, that's an act relating to the Alaska Challenge Youth Academy and providing for an effective date. It's your 28-LS0684/A document. Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair. Nice to see you on the other side. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2, and this is HB 180. The Alaska Military Youth Academy's objective is to help young Alaskans between the ages of 16 and 19 who statistically are headed for a dismal future to become self-confident, contributing citizens of our state and of our local communities. The Academy offers a 22-week residential program. Upon completing, the cadets are involved in a 12-month aftercare program, working closely with their mentors and Academy staff to further their education, enter the workforce, and/or enlist in the military. In 20 years of operation, the Academy has graduated more than 4,000 cadets. The Academy graduates about 300 each year. This bill does two things. One, changes the name of the Alaska Military Youth Academy, and two, will change the formula program. They currently receive 7 times the BSA. They will now request a direct appropriation. When asked, are you sure you want to do this? And this has really been the biggest question, not just in committee, but on the House floor. Why would you want to do this? You get 7 times the BSA. And the answer every time was, we want you to fund us based on our performance, and you may measure us by the number of cadets we graduate. Madam Chair, this is what we've been asking out of most of our school districts is, how do we fund? And now we have someone stepping up to the plate to say, fund us by what we do. So with that, I also have brought the department with us, and we also have the Department of Education for any types of questions.
Deputy Commissioner McHugh-Pierre, would you like to introduce yourself and any comments that you have on the bill?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, McHugh-Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And we've worked very closely with Representative Tammy Wilson and Senator Giesel, who introduced a companion on this side of the legislature to address this issue. We are one of the best programs in the country, and we believe we can be the best if we have the ability to plan and act and follow through, just like we ask our cadets to do through our budget cycle. Right now, we get a budget number from the BSA, and we are a match program with National Guard Bureau through the DOD, but we get a number based on a count on October 1st, the year before we received the money. And it was a great idea 11 years ago, and I believe Senator Kelly was one of the architects of the plan to establish this funding formula to protect and allow the division to grow. And it has. And now that we're 20 years old, we have the ability to take off the training wheels and soar to new heights. We can ride, and we can do a great job. So we appreciate your support. I'd love to answer any questions, and we'd like to see this move on so we can go through the full budget process this fiscal year and debate the merits of the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. With that, I'd like to direct the committee's attention to the fiscal notes, since we have the sponsor and the Deputy Commissioner here. Fiscal note number 3 for HB 190, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, allocation to the Alaska Military Youth Academy, OMB component 1969. For FY14, the proposed operating money is $11,074,600. Mr. McHugh, can you tell us what that's for? Or
certainly, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity there. So the fiscal note you see in front of you reflects the first column is the impact of the bill on the budget, which is zero. This does not impact fiscal year 14. It might not impact fiscal year 15. What it does is it changes the way the money comes in. And so you see that right now we have a total amount in the budget line of $11 million. That includes excess authority in the interagency receipt column, as well as the federal fund column. So you see a reduction from Department of Education of $4 million and some change. That's because that's the actual number that we received from them based on our count for fiscal year 14. So in fiscal year 15, what we'll do is we'll come forward looking for the same amount of appropriation. It'll just be different. It'll be from a GF and a GF match standpoint, and that's in the third column over. So you see the difference there.
Questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
And we would be coming up with another $4.7 million, but there's a reduction of, the 4.7. Where are those interagency receipts being reduced from?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. So as you appropriate money, instead of being appropriated to the Department of Education, that money would be appropriated directly to DMVA, and so there wouldn't be the pass-through entity there anymore.
It would come from the BSA?
No, it would not come from the BSA.
It would be transferred, and the BSA would not have to be funded for these students.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, that's correct. Instead of receiving money from the BSA, we'd receive it directly from the general fund.
Brief at ease. Thank you for that moment. I just wanted to clarify a question. As we look out for funding in future, so if we move to fiscal note number four, it is for the Department of Education and Early Development. The allocation is to the Alaska Challenge Youth Academy, OMB component number 2837. We see one appropriation or one request for FY14 of $4,791,400. We would anticipate to see in other types of fiscal notes a reoccurring number every year. Is it because each year you'll come back and ask for the allocation separately, or we should be put on notice that there will be a number requested from general fund every year? It's just that you will come to us and ask us for that specific number.
Madam Chairman, every year we'll be coming back and asking for a specific number based on the number of cadets we believe we can graduate. And so as we know, this program only serves dropouts, and the number of dropouts fluctuates. Right now we serve roughly 10%, maybe 9% of the dropout population. So as we continue to move forward, when we remove the BSA component from Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and specifically the Division of the Military Youth Academy, we would then have to address that number and make sure that number that we would receive as a match is appropriate to the audience that we're going to serve.
And Madam Chair, the way that they get these names currently is the superintendents every year send them the names of those that have dropped out of the school districts. And the role of the Department of Education is just a pass-through grant.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner McHugh-Pierre. Any further questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Pierre, you said that the students are get seven times the BSA allocation that's out there. So if the BSA is roughly $6,000, that's in excess of $40,000 per student.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it is a bit more complicated than that. So the existing formula is seven times the BSA times the number of residential students on October 1st, plus 0.6 times the BSA times the number of non-residential students on October 1st, minus the federal match money we receive. Roughly, it costs about $35,000 per graduated student. Now, clearly, we serve more students because our graduation rate is just above 70%. But we have two classes, 5 months each, resident. When they graduate from that residential cycle, then they go into a year-long mentorship program where they're required as a minimum to meet with their mentor once a month. So that's a total of a 17-month program. Then based on their placement at the end of that 12-month monitoring period, we determine if the program has been a success for that cadet.
So if you, Madam Chairman, if I could continue, I read that you have roughly 4,000 cadets that come through every year, and 70% of those are the ones that graduate. I realize that 4,000 isn't necessarily all in the graduating class, but you're saying that you have a 70% graduation rate, is that correct?
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Senator Olson, let me give some clarification on that. We've had a total of 4,000 graduates in 20 years. We actually have roughly 400 cadets, teens, who have dropped out of high school that come to the program, and we graduate roughly 300 a year. So that has gone up as well. As the program has evolved and we've learned how to better serve the needs of the students, better reach them, better communicate to them the skills and the commitment they're going to have to see success in life, we've seen that number expand.
Well, I commend you for your program there, in spite of its expensiveness, because dropouts are a rough group.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner McHugh. Representative Wilson, we will see if we have anyone online. I'd like to open the public hearing on HB 180, an act relating to Alaska Challenge Youth Academy and providing for an effective date. Is there anyone online? Is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on House Bill 180? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. What's the will of the body? Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to move House Bill 180, version 28-LS0684-A, with attached physical notes and individual committee recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 180 moves from committee. With that, we'll be at ease. Senate Finance Committee is called back to order. It is 9 19, close to that. Senator Bishop.
Madam Chairman, I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for the CS for the House Concurrent Resolution 628-LS-0655-O.
I'll object for the purposes of finding out the differences. Welcome, Christine. If you could identify yourself for the record and provide the committee the differences between the CS and the original version before us.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Christine Marisigan. I'm staff to Senator Kevin Meyer and the Senate Finance Committee. In the CS before you, there are two major changes, and they are found on pages 3 and 4. Beginning on page 3, line 11, we changed the task force that was originally 15 people to 7 people, and then those are listed on that page. On this last page, page 4, we also moved up the termination date of the committee. It's now July 1st, 2014. Gives them a little over a year to basically do the report, submit it, and then it terminates.
Are there questions from committee members? Is there any other objections? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Marcica, I guess I was wondering what the ultimate goals are of this task force that's going to be out there.
Senator Olson, through the chair, I'll allow the sponsor of the bill to address those questions in terms of the goals of the task force and their purpose. But in terms of the task force itself, we simply removed 7 other members. Those included Commissioner of Transportation or designee, Commissioner of Natural Resources or their designee, and a few other positions. And this was done in consultation with the sponsor as well as Mr. Steve Colligan.
So, Madam Chairman, Ms. Marcica, if I'm hearing you correctly, the CS has nothing to do with the ultimate purpose of the task force. It was just the changing of the numbers and changing of the termination date.
That is correct, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. The Senate CS for the CS for House Concurrent Resolution 6/O is before the committee. Representative Hughes. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee on this gorgeous morning, spring. Thank you for hearing this. I'll just start off by saying I'm very happy with the CS, and I appreciate Senator Meyer and Christine working with us on that. Through the chair, to answer Senator Hoffman's question, we'll get into that as I explain this. Resolution recognizes the Alaska Center for the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration and supports it the selection for it as one of the nation's 6 test sites. And specifically, the legislative task force's job is to come up with policy recommendations for us next session. And with the new technology that's emerging, we need to revisit certain laws to ensure that we have the safety of our citizens and protect their privacy. And that was actually why I even came to this subject matter. I had Alaskans and constituents hearing about things around our country. You've heard them too regarding drones, the military use of drones, and some fear and concerns that they could be spying on us and in our backyards and looking in our bathroom windows, that kind of thing. So that was something I began to research, and I realized that this technology can be used for good. And I learned about what was happening up in Fairbanks, and that our state is actually light years ahead of other states as far as the research. And there's already business activity starting to cluster around this industry. And so it's important for us to embrace the technology for good, to harness it for good. And the unmanned aircraft have been used for dull, dirty, and dangerous work, and they can be used to save lives, reduce risk to pilots. In fact, one was used to locate a downed aircraft near Bethel, and one was used to count sea lions, which allowed an accurate count and kept the sea lions off the endangered species list. One guided a few months ago, a while back, the fuel tanker to Nome. So here in Alaska, we've already used them for good, and they could be helpful monitoring infrastructure such as the pipeline. And it's expected as the unmanned aircraft are integrated into national airspace, it will grow in a very short time, expected actually in the first 3 years, to grow from about 70,000 jobs nationwide to over 100,000, and will exceed a $13, $14 billion industry. And because, as I said earlier, Alaska is light years ahead of other states, we have the potential to have not just a sliver of that economic pie, but a slice of it. And so I think it's important that we be very careful in any policy we craft in our state. And so the task force will be looking at two things, those privacy concerns, and then also the application and use of the unmanned aircraft and its potential use in the private sector. And so that pretty much is, I'm happy to answer questions if you have any, but I appreciate your support.
Thank you. I'd just like to let the committee know that we have Roe Bailey from the University of Alaska online for questions, and we have one person waiting to testify on this issue. Senator Dunleavy, questions for the sponsor?
Just a brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Any further questions from committee members to Representative Hughes? Seeing none, I'd like to, while she's at the table, take up the fiscal note. Senator Dunleavy, would you like to make a comment on the question that you were asking at the at ease?
Yes, thank you. Just briefly on the back on the the narrative, we just have to reconcile the numbers related to the body of the bill. On the back of the fiscal note, you have 13 members, and I think we're down to 7.
Thank you, Senator Dunleavy. For the record, we're looking at fiscal note number 2. It replaced fiscal note number 1. It's for the Department of the Alaska Legislature. The allocation is to council and subcommittees. The OMB component number is 783, and from in FY14, it's indeterminate. And then the reference to the back will have to be updated. There has been some concern that this committee will cost money. Specifically in the bill itself, it says that committee members will be allowed travel and per diem, that they're not compensated. But as I understand it, the departments have said we would absorb those costs and that no additional money would be needed. Is that accurate, Representative Hughes?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair, and I just want to say I never identified myself earlier in the record, so I'm Shelley Hughes, representing District 8, Palmer.
Thank you. With that, with the committee's support, I'd like to move into public hearing. Senator Bishop, did you have a question first? The public hearing is now open on the Senate CS for the CS for House Concurrent Resolution 6. Recognizing the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Is there anyone wishing to testify on concurrent resolution number 6? Online, Steve Colligan. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. Can you hear me?
We can, if you'd identify yourself for the record in 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm Steve Colligan, a resident of Wasilla, business owner in Anchorage and Wasilla. I'm calling to testify, and I appreciate you taking this subject up. I've been working on these subjects for more than 4 years with a group called the Academy of Model Aeronautics, of which Mitch Rose in D.C. is our government affairs contact. But the long and short of it is I'm also a alumni of University of Alaska Fairbanks, but I'm not here to testify for Fairbanks, but more to speak to the committee as a whole and the size of this committee. The bottom line is there's been many of us in the industry following this where these tools are legitimate and affordable and efficient tools for gathering data. I professionally in the mapping business, and just like satellite imagery has revolutionized the way we collect data over aerial traditional aircraft platforms, I fully believe that this technology is the next revolution of professional data gathering tools. But it also brings along with it, and the reason I bring up Academy of Model Aeronautics, if you go to, I've submitted testimony and data to the body or to the each one of the senators in the past, probably put 10 pounds of stuff in a 3-pound sack. But the reality is there's 50 different states, all states that have some form of legislation, some of them respectful, some of them I consider wild-eyed bomb-throwing and just fear and loathing, especially like in Oregon where the first legislation came out, made the toy that you bought your grandkids for Christmas that has a capable camera on it as a surveillance device and all sorts of different aspects. But the reality is the change in this industry, called an evolution, covers research, public safety, commercial operation, and integrated with our own laws, and then myself trying to protect the over 100-year hobby, and AMA, Academy of Modern Aeronautics, is a 75-year self-regulating, self-insured agency that brought up these same issues, and I forwarded you excerpts from their 75th anniversary catalog that in 1910, when aviation was just starting its birth, these same issues kind of came up, and it was handled through a professional cooperative relationship between bodies concerned to bring forward the issues to produce very meaningful legislation that wasn't over the edge, that allowed things to move forward, but also protected the public. In this is a great concern of protecting general aviation and commercial aviation as these types of tools are allowed to fly into the airspace, you know, above 500 feet. I could go on for hours, but I respect your time. I would just ask that you pass this out, that you direct this body to come back with meaningful bulleted items based on legitimate research, legitimate laws, and things that may or may not need to be changed so that the public is aware and it's focused. Most of the people identified on this panel are already involved, like myself, my own nickel, trips to D.C. for the last 3 years, and already have it in their purview of the scope of their research. And I would just ask that you move this out of support, and I look forward to having an engaging conversation with these other groups to move this ahead and allow Alaska to take the lead on the use of this technology. I truly believe that Alaska's best and worst of weather, best and worst of terrain, and best and worst of communication are the ultimate laboratory to prove out some of these things in a safe and meaningful way. And with that, I'll stand by for any questions, but I really appreciate your time, and I know you guys are really busy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Culligan. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Mr. Culligan, thanks for coming out this morning. It's nice to hear somebody that's got some expertise in the field. One of the questions, the first question I have for you is, you talked about the altitude being in excess of 500 feet. What's the maximum altitude these things can go up to?
Well, so it depends on what you're talking about, but the Academy of Model Aeronautics that's been in, you know, over 76 years of formal organization has existing safety and rules, and it's actually 400-foot ceiling. And there's a for those aircraft, there is a weight limit. But, you know, realistically, the difference between a UAV or UAS system and a model airplane, it used to be that, you know, automated guidance cost $1 million, then $100,000, then $10,000, then $1,000. Now we're talking about off-the-shelf boards that are hundreds of dollars, very affordable, and it's through some guidelines, and AMA has already self-imposed those guidelines, but and working with the FAA, and that's what I like about the research that the university is doing, is it's transitioning and having this engaging discussion. But it's really the smaller aircraft that are currently flying under 500 feet or 400 feet for research, and then being used under research purposes with special agreements that are probably the most cost-effective and most useful in many cases.
If I could, Madam Chairman, Maybe this isn't a question I should be having for you as part of maybe the sponsor that's there, because I'm sure that the drones are in excess of quite a bit in excess of the model aircraft that your rules that you have. In fact, I think the drones are up close to the jetway altitude, and so I think a task force is going to be looking at things like that. And so I guess that maybe it's a question for the sponsor.
Senator Olson, we do have online Roe Bailey, who may be able to answer that question if I could direct it there. Representative Hughes, did you have a comment first?
Yeah, I would encourage that question to go to Roe Bailey. She's a retired Air Force Brigadier General with the Research Center at Fairbanks and is incredibly knowledgeable.
Ms. Bailey, are you online?
I am.
And did you hear the question?
I did, and thank you for the opportunity to respond. Through the chair, the range and altitude potential for unmanned aircraft systems is virtually the same as any manned aircraft system. Now, the ones that the University of Alaska has been working with are generally much smaller, generally under 55 pounds, but capable of significant altitude. And the ones that the military has, like the Global Hawk, can go up in excess of 60,000 feet. The highest altitude of the ones that we own can go to about 22,000 feet at the Pan Eagle. But the key point is that no drone enters, or no unmanned aircraft system, which is our preferred terminology, enters the national airspace system without extensive vetting by the FAA to determine that the operators in the aircraft are safe and that the operators are well-versed in operating in the system, that NOTAMs are prepared and issued prior to the any flight, and that the local FAA air traffic control is notified prior to within 30 minutes before any flights are going on, and then after flights are complete. What the test sites are meant to do is to more thoroughly develop the processes and procedures to ensure that manned aviation is safe at all times when the operation of unmanned aircraft systems is expanded beyond public entities to private and commercial entities. I'd be happy to answer any other questions, but I think I've covered everything that was asked.
Senator Olson, follow-up.
General Bailey, thank you very much for coming on this morning. Certainly the drone situation has got everybody's attention, and especially those of the pilots. You said that some of the maximum altitude is up in 22,000 feet, which is well above the positive control area airspace, which is starts at 18,000 feet. And I was wondering, if that is the case, what are the plans for drones that go out of control? And I realize that the standard operation is that, yes, we take very careful and try and do all this thing to make sure it stay under control. But we should all remember that in Iran over there, one of the drones was taken over by the guys in the black hats and was brought down to earth and was under their control. What happens if one of these drones goes out of control, or the transponder goes off, or ATC can't track it on the radar?
Ms. Bailey.
Through the chair, there are several elements of addressing the situation that you're talking about. The first one is a very serious issue of spoof and jam-proof communication systems. And, in fact, that's one of the key obstacles to integrating unmanned aircraft into the national airspace system that the FAA wants the test sites to look into. So that means robusting the comm systems so that kind of takeover, the probability of it happening is reduced to the level of safety that the FAA requires, which for everything else has been 1 × 10⁻⁹, which is a significant safety factor, a greater safety factor than is true in most other things, in fact. So that's the first piece. The second piece is to have any unmanned aircraft system, undergo significant testing to include testing under lost link procedures where the operator turns off the system, turns off the communication from the control station and evaluates the response of the aircraft, which gets to the third piece, which is incorporating extensive and well-protected software on board that causes the autopilot to take specific and known actions. And those actions, for the ones that we've worked with so far, those actions include moving to the last location and altitude at which the aircraft had a positive link. If it doesn't achieve that link heading towards home, if it doesn't have knowledge of home, meaning it's lost its GPS signal or it's lost its other means of navigation, then landing immediately, which in many cases may be a crash, but that's, you know, it's a loss of a piece of equipment, not of risk to others. And so just as with a manned aircraft, you program in ahead of time acceptable pitching sites for that kind of aircraft or acceptable alternate landing sites. And so each of these things, these are all techniques. And then the final technique is to incorporate a flight termination system on certain aircraft, and the determination of which one is, again, part of what will be ascertained in the process of being one of these test sites, that will have a system on board with a completely separate and secure communications link that will allow you to force it to crash.
General Bailey, thank you very much for your testimony this morning.
The last
comment I have, Madam Chairman, has to do with the sponsor. And obviously, collision with unmanned aircraft, being in a manned aircraft myself, is a great concern. And I'm assuming that this is going to be addressed by the task force, because you have a high altitude, as she was pointed out, the high altitude that jetway that comes in from, especially from the west, from the south, out of Fairbanks, there where many of this stuff is going on, that corridor there. So I'm assuming that they're going to be looking at the whole with a task force, is that correct?
Representative Hughes.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. Yes, Senator Olson, that is correct, and the Brigadier General could speak to this better than I could, but I do know that FAA's is the main purpose is safety, and my understanding is that the unmanned aircraft have to be operated by pilots, and so that does allow some security in my mind, but safety is absolutely important.
Thank you, Representative Hughes. I did fail, and I wanted to apologize to Senator Olson. He has been with us almost the entire meeting. But you've been on the record, Senator Olson, so thank you so much. We also were joined a bit ago by Senator Meyer, so I'm turning that gavel back over to him. Senator Meyer.
Great. Thank you, Vice Chair Faircloth, for filling in for me there. I believe you were taking public testimony.
We are.
Okay. Is Mike Connor the next?
Mike Coons.
Oh, Mike Coons, I'm sorry. And is Mike here or is he?
Online.
Oh, he's online. Oh, questions. Okay, very good. All right. All right, was there anyone else who wanted to testify? Did we go through everybody? Okay. Well, very good. We'll close public testimony. And I understand you went through the fiscal note on it.
We did, Senator Meyer.
Okay.
And we've adopted the CS.
Okay. So is there any other questions from the committee members? And the resolution, the changes to you've discussed with the sponsor, and she's okay. Okay. Thumbs up. All right, great. And Senator Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee substitute for the CS for House Concurrent Resolution 628-LS0655-O from committee with individual recommendations in forthcoming amended fiscal note.
Okay.
Individual committee recommendations.
Great. Thank you, Senator Faircloth. There's no objections, and the committee moves, or the bill moves from committee. At 10 o'clock in here, we'll have the last conference committee meeting. And then, obviously, the Gnome Brunch is going on right now till noon, so encourage everybody to go there. It's always good food. And then we have floor session at noon. We'll go ahead and leave our finance meeting scheduled for 1:30. I don't anticipate that we'll be meeting, but just in case, we'll have that scheduled. Is there anything else come before the committee at this time? Senator Dunlap, you have a question? You look puzzled. to move out? Is that what you wanted?
He wants a public hearing, Mr. Chair.
No, the SB 90 is not scheduled for today. Actually, yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you. And with that, we're adjourned.